This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with John Dilworth. John, it's great having you on the show.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Pill Eater.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pill Eater. And Pill Eater, you've been a fan for a long time.
Yes, I have.
Since you were a kid.
I'm actually quite excited to get John's attention to be on our show. I'm actually a huge fan of his art.
I discovered him recently through you, but I did watch the show Doug on Nickelodeon as a kid.
But I didn't have anything to do with that. That's not my show.
It's that Jim Jenkins show.
Jim Jenkins show.
Yeah.
When I was 8 years old, I first saw Courage. I think I was really young, and the first episode I saw was the Duck Brothers. And it was this kind of strange, cute cartoon. I liked it because there was a pink dog in it. And then when I was like that 9 years old, I started watching it religiously, and it was like Cartoon Network was like the only channel on that time. And so eventually it was like kind of the only cartoon I got into at that. But it wasn't until later that after when I got older that I looked up John R. Dilworth, and John himself is a very accomplished animator and has many cartoons since the late 80s and going it from there. You know, and
was your first project? It was a student film in a 1985, Pierre.
Oh yeah, Pierre, of course. But it's interesting that Pill Eater, you mentioned, you described Courage as pink. And in fact, he is pink. But when I colored him, I wasn't thinking pink as a marketing tool. I was thinking pink as a bit, a little soft, gentle. Right? Fragile with the world.
Isn't it like Fuchsia or...
Fuchsia is what the network's marketing department began pushing. And I'll tell you why. It was believed that boys would not be interested in pink stuff.
Oh, yeah. Was so we could be blue or something?
Well, listen, if I had the smarts back then, probably I would have made the dog blue. You know, the royalties would be so much better.
You'd be like teal. But
I can't, but that's the way it is. And it's sad, too, because it brings up a lot of questions about prejudices and engineered ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about millenniums.
You have a lot of cartoons which are unfinished pilots that haven't been released to networks. I mean, just recently on your YouTube channel, one of those unfinished pilots was Prudence, and it looked very similar to Courage, and there's two different versions of Prudence. I really like the first one because that really hits home of that Courage style where it's this like horror kind of very surreal stuff. And it's also that one with the monkeys, Chips and Chugle, or something like that. It just seems like, oh, yeah. I wish they were made, but in some alternate reality, it's unfortunate that the networks can't pick it up, and it's just lost art in some respect, you know? It seems like it's very competitive.
I know your work has a very kind of a surrealist feel. Were you influenced by, like, Horace and Gromit?
That's funny. I never thought of that.
Dali.
Oh yeah. I can.
That makes sense. Yeah, I can definitely
see the Dali in there. I mean, I know you recently worked with stop motion. I know in Rinky Dink, there's this whole stop motion sequence, and in later episodes of Courage, there is some of that stop motion sequencing on it. I mean,
I'm a big fan of mixed media. I always have from the early days of my experimenting in film. I always felt like the mediums were naturally simpatico. Look how many people exist in one small space and still can get along, let's hope. Well, for me, that's the same as the mediums. All it requires is the right aesthetic balance so that it all works together. There's nothing worse, I mean, from my point of view, than seeing an attempt at mixed media. But there's no cohesion. There's no like an inner illusion to it. We have to be careful that, yes, these things can exist. And you know what show I really admire? That one with the cats, the cat family, and has every cut, Gumball. I love the way that they mix that.
Oh, yeah. Do you watch
art?
Do you like Pickles and Peanut? that's really mixed media. That's on Disney.
Really? Well, that probably, yeah.
They basically, that it's makes like, sense. It's like, they'll do like a paper sequence and then a clay sequence. There's just so much going on that I can't really, it's more like an artsy show. You can turn off the TV on mute and watch the show for its media.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying with Gumball is the same way. A lot of these newer cartoons, they're being very free form with their medium, but it also seems to me that the whole kind of lowbrow art that was like really popular like 10 or 20 years ago has now became mainstream, where it seems like these hip cartoons.
Pill Eater, what are you referring to specifically?
You know, I'm just thinking of like the classic MTV cartoons like Aeon Flux and like The Max or like these cartoons that
those were progressive. I wouldn't consider them lowbrow. Not to contrary.
No, I mean lowbrow is like the art
progressive.
Movie. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean lowbrow isn't like a, you know, the whole fine art like kind of movement. It was, yeah, definitely. And I'm saying
nobody's producing that now.
Yes, yes. It's true. I mean, right.
Courage
now,
would not get produced now.
I know you tried to do the CGI.
Another theme I've noticed is kind of you have this like surreal theme and also the, kind of a horror theme in a lot of your work.
And comedy. Don't forget comedy,
yeah,
Robert.
Comedy, horror, all those themes. I remember as a kid in the 90s, like there were children's horror shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
But I noticed there's been a
and Goosebumps.
But there's been a kind of decline in that. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, you understand how the market works. Who are the people behind the market? You know, I believe it's all manipulated. If there's a trend and it's getting the numbers, it's getting the ads, you track it. Mm-hmm. And when you see it dipping, just change, you do something else, you change it up. Change it up.
It seems like some of your stuff might be too dark. Or two of the on the not the same cliche. It's on the horror side, like from Courage Made. But it just seems like there's this dark art where, if you tune into like the Disney Channel, like I'm thinking of Star versus the Forces of Evil, where it's this kind of teen show where it's in between the ages of like 15 to like moving on 18. But ironically, it could be watched by people my age in their early 20s, and it could be a show related to that college age rather instead. And I think it's strange that do we live in like some kind of softer generation now? And now art is kind of what makes you feel good about yourself, or some kind of aesthetic where it's more about romance or something like that. I don't know. That's something to think about. Like how powerful anime has been in the past 20 years, and how now it's infiltrated in our art culture, and it's kind of like now everyone has their own anime spinoff, or at least has influence by either the chibi art style or, to some respect, maybe manga. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know how to comment on that if infatuation, but it's a cult. And I feel like a lot of it may be connected to how we are receiving the forms. A good interview would be to try and get to the bottom of the attraction between the sort of religious following of manga on the Western mind.
Were
Think
you about influenced it. By the early manga, like the film Akira from the 80s and the Padalero from the 70s?
Oh, what about Ghost in the Shell?
Oh, yeah. They're doing the whole live-action movie for that soon, too.
Ghost in the Shell was, revolutionary. First of all, I love the exactness of it. And they also used mixed media and locations. I mean, if you've ever been to Hong Kong, when the airport was in Hong Kong, you'll understand why you see those jumbo jets flying above the buildings. So there are really references of time. They're recording our life.
That's interesting because I've only seen Ghost in the Shell like once or twice. I mean, it's funny. I should actually know this because I actually went to school for Asian studies, but I the films I would pay attention to in my geeky Japanese class were like these obscure Japanese animations like there was this film called She the Brat and Aim for the Ace, which were like these late 70s Japanese animations, which are completely unknown in the Western world. Yet you can find some English fan sub or fan subtitle or some on YouTube, but it's I know what you're saying, where it's like animation could reflect the reality of the world at that time. So in Ghost in the Shell's time, or even of Akira, it does represent that kind of mid-80s or type of sci-fi thing of the digital age and how computers and robots and androids. Yeah, it's something to definitely...
And surveillance. Mm-hmm. And surveillance.
Yes. I mean, that's something of interest.
Well, for the future. So if you're in your 20s, what are you looking forward to?
I kind of want to graduate school and then get a job and then get married, have a beautiful girlfriend, and then maybe have children. Thing is, I'm not so sure if to have money for that or even accomplish my arts. I'm not so sure if I can have that avenue because of means and access. So it's like, even not to say life is a science fiction dystopian, but it seems like as life changes, there's a lot of avenues and politics that are happening. That's so radical from the past what has happened.
Since we're on that topic, what do you think about putting sort of adult themes that we're discussing, including like just themes that relate to life, into children's cartoons?
Well, that's my modus operandi. I mean, I don't even know if I could write stories that I want to write, contemporary stories about issues of today, and find a way to conceal them in the art. I think there would be a lot of pushback, and I think it has a lot to do with Pill Eater was saying that there's a softening, a kind of, again, I like this manga sweetness, this saccharine. Well, I don't know what it is. It's not really trippy, hallucinogenic.
I call it like twee. It's very twee.
Well, it's very twee, and it has this kind of power over a being, like much like the old religions used to have over our ancestors.
Like, I'm thinking like the cartoon shows like Adventure Time has definitely led that twee personality, or even this, I'm thinking of Bee and Puppy Cat. It's this kind of Flash, you know, post-Flash cartooning or some digital animation. It also has to do with a lot with like the West Coast. Well, I mean, I'm not in California, but it seems to me all these cartoons are being made over there. And it seems to me that some of that culture lingers through, even though if you're not even from... it's kind of like this yuppie kind of thing. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's definitely, I would just say, twee. And it's definitely that kind of art you see on Tumblr, or previous it was on DeviantArt. Now it's just like they call it Tumblr art, where it's just it's there, and it's just like anybody can have like a digital computer and just draw their own like twee romance cartoons. I think a lot of kids my age, they listen to twee music and draw twee things, and their subjects are about how great of me of being a boyfriend and girlfriend is. And there's that manga thing too, because I think manga has very of the influence, especially in that Western translation of it. So,
well, do you think that there is some unseen hands at play, guiding, suggesting, provoking even some of these new social media platforms, encouraging participants to upload, live more within these platforms? And you could think about it in terms of whispering in somebody's ear that then passes to whisper on, but it changes the more people that hear it, right? They add to it. That old game, where you tell a story and you
it
on.
Yeah. I feel all the internet memes are kind of like that. Do you follow the different internet memes? Like, the big one is like Pepe the Frog.
No, I know, because I refuse to. I just choose not to. Because one, I have some... I don't have the time.
There's so and also, much of it. I mean,
there's so much of it. Yes. Yeah, there's so much of it. But then I'm not seeking anything. I'm certainly not seeking Pepe the Frog.
You know, it's so amazing where it's like, I would think these internet memes are basically public domain cartoons where you can just upload it on 4chan, and then if somebody likes it, like some geeky cartoon, you can get into even MS Paint. I don't know if that's a... But, you know, some program and just upload it, and it's like this own artist revolution that's happening. But it's really humorous or even really dark and extreme.
Well, you got to be careful, because read the fine print on all of these platforms.
They're public domain, right?
You got to read the fine print. You have to be careful what you post if it's precious to you.
Oh, yeah. It's like if you were to
There could be claims on it.
You know, it's like if you
it's
were to
It's not free. The world is not free, even if it's packaged as free.
Imagine if Courage was some internet meme and you just drew it out and then it became this public domain thing. And people... Yeah, it's like... I know what you're saying. Is that like whole...
As long as Cartoon Network or Warner Brothers feel like they're not losing a single penny in revenue, they'll permit it. It's good marketing, good advertising.
It's like, who made up that whole where the sunglasses fall on the character and says, deal with it? It seems like now corporations or companies can just say, deal with it, trademark, as it belongs to everyone. But it seems to me one guy in his basement probably made that up one day. And I don't know. It seems like if there was some trademark on it, he would have got all the
I don't know. I'm skeptical about the whole thing, because who is the kid in the basement working for?
No one. And that's the...
You don't know that.
That's
my point. The leader. That's my point.
It could be a conspiracy. Yeah.
It's not a... I don't know what that is. I mean, are you saying conspiracy in terms of, let's say, a government of a state recognizes RICO? Or the fact that, in fact, conspiracies do exist?
I don't know.
How do you mean by that? That's a very hot word, and it's been made to provoke feelings instead of intelligence. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather not use that. But all I'm saying is that it's a very tricky world that's being developed and luring in. And I think that for me, it's more important to keep an open mind about what it is that we're doing and for what purpose. To go where?
Mm-hmm. Do you know of the whole creepypasta thing? That's a very popular internet.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
It's basically somebody goes online and they make a horror story, but pretend it's real, but then everyone believes it's real, but it's not real, and then people spread it. It's kind of like internet fads, but it's horror story. And I always think to myself, this reminding back to your art, it seems like Courage the Cowardly Dog has definitely scarred a younger millennial generation. And so I think they'll make creepy pastas based upon Courage, especially...
Yeah, I hope so.
Like, you know, there's Slender Man, The Rake, Rushing Sleeping Experiment. But I'm thinking of, like, you know, you did recently did commentary on, you know, King Ramsay, the King Ramsay Cursed, where he's, like, Return the Sloth character, and that scared me when I was young in elementary, or even... You know what's often cited on the countdowns of scary things? I think it's You're Worthless, that blue thing in the Perfect episode of Courage.
Sure, that was my brother's design. He designed that before he passed on. And I brought it to a really, wow, what a master at this technology, converted it into the CGI, and using very subtle moves made that thing kind of float.
You said also that King Ramsay, when you were doing the CGI for that, you said that you like Parappa the Rapper.
Oh, man, I was knocked out by that.
Yeah.
I tell you. I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, it's not a deconstruction.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's a reveal and a celebration of normalcy in its unfamiliar form.
I mean, my mom is a huge fan of Rodney Greenblatt. His art is just—it's
really
under. Yeah, my mom has actually. We actually met him in person.
Cruel mom.
I know. We met him in person, and he's a very nice guy. But yeah, we should have him on the show sometime. He's a practicing Buddhist. Actually, he's very interesting, and he's done his most of his art is in Japan, and he's a very interesting background. I wonder if you ever met him in person.
All is impermanent. All is without self.
Do you get a lot of inspiration from your work from personal experiences, a lot of it is a very dreamlike. Also, have you gotten any inspiration from dreams that you've had?
No, I don't. I don't do that Dali thing. You know, he used to elicit sleep awake, sit in a chair, hold a utensil in his fingertips, and just at the moment he falls asleep, he drops the spoon, right? And that image he sees in his brain gets flashed like a camera, and he records it and uses the material for his canvases. At least that's the myth, right? I never met him, but I don't do that. Dreams don't talk to me that way. In fact, I was just trying to sort out what dreams really are. And speaking of Buddhism, I mean, what are dreams? So the old Greeks, they thought the dreams were demons not given their due, not given their chance to express themselves. So they're repressed impulses. What does that tell you about expressing oneself? Don't hold back, because then the demons just run amok, right? And how often do you hear that? No matter what age you are.
It's interesting. That's funny. I was just thinking of you know, you've recently been doing Goose in High Heels, and I just wanted to talk about that because I've been interested in that. To. I was interested in that because it seems to me when I look at those animated clips, they almost tell a story that seems like, I don't know, it seems like it's your magnus opus or opus, you know? It seems like it looks like this big grand art that's about to happen. And it seems to me what you're talking about seems like there's that philosophy in cartooning, but there's no words being incited, or there's some, you know, while I was just looking at, there's like that. There's one clip where it's like a guy in a blanket. It looks like they're going to have sex, but then they go around. And like, I don't know. It seems, is there some message in that? Or I don't know when Goose in High Heels comes out, but it seems like this is traditionally done in Flash and something you're doing on your own. And if there's philosophy behind that, what to expect?
Well, I'm using the software in a very unusual way. It's not intended to be used as a traditional pen and paper. But that's what I'm doing. I'm just drawing directly into the thing. And it's my first attempt. So I'm teaching myself, discovering things as I go along. But Goose in High Heels really tells the story of, has three stories in it. And it's an absolute essential piece that I feel like I'm doing. That's all I'm doing. I'm totally devoted into it, losing myself into it, because I just feel it's so absolutely necessary. And the unpleasant part of it, it's inspired by the events that happened 6 years ago in Fukushima. And unfortunately, sadly, despairingly, happening again just recently, I think yesterday, another monumental earthquake going off. I mean, just, we don't have a break, we don't have a chance. And here is art. Here is art again, acting as a messenger. How do you get the message out? What's important to you? For me, I don't know what's more important than the continuity of a good life, of a life that's not shortened. How do we live today? Do we live at some irrational height? Because it's like, you know, Prince's 1999, or, you know, party today, tomorrow may be gone. It's totally irrational to me. I don't know who your idols and mentors are, but I feel deeply that our authorities have failed us to allow this event to happen ongoing. No. And I'm an artist.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, yeah, art does reflect on that pain. You know, that's interesting to think about.
Life in Transition, a film I made back in 2001, right? September 11th, that inspired that film. I was filled with all sorts of horror.
Oh, yeah.
Film was that.
Were you in New York at the time that 9/11 happened?
Of course, but it's not what I want to talk about.
I know. But it seems that it's that powerful of emotion to write it in medium that I never would think that way about.
But we're talking about art, right? And yeah. How does this definition of art making compare to the memes, Snowden, how do you pronounce it, of today? and these social media platforms, what they call social media platforms, even I'm repeating it. That's how the Pavlovian instinct is so rooted in our cultures.
It's interesting you kind of contrast like those memes of art. One, there's sort of like this debate of whether art should be like for the masses and everyone should be engaged in producing their own art, or is it something more kind of elitist and are some people like maybe on a higher intellectual level? Which do you sort of look at things that way?
I never look at things in an elitist way. I'm not an elitist. A higher intellectual level? Well, one's trained. You know, you train. You take your personal initiative and will, and you want to learn things. The worst, I feel, for a society, a civilization, is not to educate themselves. So I feel that art can provide necessary tools in learning how to express oneself. And that is what I'm interested in. As you know, Joseph Campbell, some guy that was interested in old people, old fossils and cultures, brilliant man. He thought, you know, he knew he wasn't changing the world, but he was changing people. And that's what I feel like we need to do. If you have a message for your millenniums and whoever else wants to come along, your 20-somethings, your teens, this is what's vital. We got to wake up. You know, mm-hmm. We're in a tough, tough, tough world.
I mean, it seems like the first way to wake up would to be show everyone your cartoons, your most meaningful cartoons.
Well, when I make Usain High Heels, who knows how it's going to be received? Because it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be pleasant. I already lost. I mean, networks won't. I mean, they would call my shows too weird now. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying Courage may not have been, possibly not have been produced today. And that we were able to get the messages of Courage, the themes that were important to me produced at that time, is a miracle. That it's getting aired today, continuously, somewhere on this planet, is a miracle.
Because the role of art is to touch on a lot of serious issues facing humanity and social commentary, and as you were saying, like the media networks, their goal is to obviously to make as much of a profit as possible. So if something has any kind of a controversy and might make people uncomfortable, that's going to go against their profit motive. But that contradicts the goal of the artist, is to kind of get people out of their comfort zone and to challenge their own ways of thinking.
Yeah, I wish that I was able to do that, but I'm not there yet. But I don't. I have no idea what to expect with Goose when it gets released, whether or not it will be received, if it will actually be able to do its role that I intend. But all I can do is employ all my soul into this thing and listen and observe and be pure. That's why I'm totally pure. A year and a half, going 2 years, 2017, we'll finish the film. And I can't be distracted by anything else but just this film. About the art, the way these things move. Not a single word of dialogue. This thing is going to run to maybe 23 minutes. And it's going to be, if I fail, I go into diplomacy. I mean, really, think about it. If I can't be an animator anymore, I'm going to try to learn to slow the machine down. Isn't that what diplomacy should be? Diplomats, diplomacy. You're not going to stop evil. Evil is natural. But maybe you can just, you know, trip them up a bit. I don't know. I have a great admiration to political diplomats now. Maybe it's because I don't know what demographic I fit into. What's a 50-something?
Baby boomers.
What?
It's like what? Baby boomers, Gen X, and then millennial, right? Those are like the three. Those are like the three main like generations.
Am I a baby boomer?
I'm not so sure. I don't know what I am. Okay.
I guess that's like people born in the 50s to early 60s.
No, I was born in 63.
So you're kind of on the border of baby boomers and like Generation X.
I missed all the spaceships. When the UFOs came around, right? I missed that big trip.
Do you identify with an era in history? So you pretty much like grew up in the 80s and 70s?
Yeah, sure. I don't remember the 70s at all, but the 80s was my period of just, you know, growing into my pants. But I don't know. I don't think that there is. I think right now, babies, right now is the time.
Do you? I'm just interested, but do you know of the Thief and the Cobbler?
Of course, Richard Williams is he's a mentor. When I do special programs in animation, I use his very brilliant book.
Yes, I have that book actually in my library. I had that when I was like 8, 10 years old or something, and I wanted to do cartooning. And I did do Flash cartooning and had it on Newgrounds for a bit. I mean, some of it was on YouTube, but I just did clip art, and basically I didn't even know he did Thief and the Cobbler until much later, but I just took it for granted and just read the book as this is the animator survival guide.
Well, he wasn't able to complete that vision of his, and there is a myth, that should be a myth about the hero-like character who goes on this adventure but does not succeed, but produces a brilliant, unfinished thing. I'm not familiar of such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with this story.
It just reminds me of like something you would do on your own path.
No
like
way! I would finish everything. I'd finish everything.
I don't know. I don't know if there's like some cartoon I don't know about.
Films like this applies to cartoons as well, but films are always like kind of very formulaic. So there's like the plot, and then there's like the finale, and everything is resolved, and it doesn't reflect like reality.
No, well, you know, it's necessary. We need to be able to possess a prescient power, and that would be expecting a conclusion or an outcome, right? And we don't want to be disappointed.
It's kind of like when you're young, like you have this dream of what your life is going to be like when you grow up. But then you kind of get to a certain point in your life and you like think like, this is it.
Well, the thing is that we're constantly evolving. Think about, I know it's not possible, and why would one? Think of our entry out of the caves into the sunlight. Wow! Have you ever been to a cave where our ancestors drew on the walls like children?
I've only been to the Philadelphia Art Museum and only seen those things, but that's interesting.
Go if you want to be part of something that's so much bigger than our life right now. And remind yourself of the connection. 40,000 years ago, I saw our ancestors blow circles on a wall, or I saw the wall and I saw the circles. I wasn't there 40,000 years ago. But it changes you. You start to see how we developed. And then maybe perhaps you start asking yourself, how did we go this way and not that way?
No, that's interesting about, you know, even how the first animation, was it just like flip book or was it just like comics or, you know, it's just like,
no.
I'm surprised.
No, it was in a cave. It was in the caves. Look at the animals. Look at our Neolithic ancestors drawing multiple legs of an animal. They were running in place. Can you imagine the power of a pure mind observing nature? You in nature, you probably would blow out your brain from the intensity of it.
I mean, I do like poetry on that, and sometimes the poetry, sorry, there's some poetry out there that does talk about nature, or there are real actual accounts that talk about, but yeah, if you're there and experience, it's something of a different, I'm going off digressing here. I'm thinking of Martin.
Well, I can understand that feeling, like going to the places like in the mountains and places in California and the wilderness. And the thing is that it's something people just, everyone should do, because people are constantly connected, like, to their devices and to the internet and to the TV.
Oh, baby, are you so right?
And if you go out to a place, and even when people travel, I mean, people still bring that stuff with them. But there's just something about going to a place like that in the mountains and just spending, even if it's like a couple hours on a hike, it can just clear out your mind. And
yeah, we don't want to get too narrow. I mean, I know the life is for one to live as they want, right? As long as we're not harming ourselves and others, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Think of what the Cat in the Hat said. Now, have no fear. Have no fear, said the cat. My tricks are not bad, said the Cat in the Hat. Now, this cat, Dr. Seuss, he was tripped out, lived in a lighthouse. What are lighthouses? Guideposts signaling ships way out on the horizon to safety. And there is art passing through the generations with messages that still matter to some. Will our memes, whatever they call these things on our current platforms, will these arts that we're making today, will they exceed 100 years in time?
I think James Joyce wrote in a lighthouse. I don't know. This is just a whole thinking about that.
Well, this cat is amazing. Think of the artist as a young man. Mm-hmm. Read that book, huh?
I think, yeah, I do remember it, yeah.
A Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man.
What I find with my work, I mean, I'm a painter, is...
Oh, bravo, bravo.
I get started on something, and I don't necessarily, like, think I have this specific, like, point I'm going to get across to people, but I see an image, and then eventually it comes out it comes out subconsciously, and yeah. You feel something if you look at a painting, sure. But it's not always expressed in words.
Of course, of course. Well, that's the dynamic of the aesthetic arrest. Right? It's not a thing you can describe. You feel it. I was just talking about the subject of, does art possess soul? And how does one define the soul of a thing? And I believe that one can identify this thing that we call a soul. You hear it in music. Right? Mm-hmm. You see it in interactions between a human and an animal.
And people perceive art differently. Like with your work, do you want people to have their own personal experience, or do you have your kind of vision that you want people to get from that, or can people have their own experience from work in general and from your work specifically?
Of course. There's no point in pulling the curtain over and showing everything.
Like, I'm thinking of, you know, relation to your art. I mean, this might sound a little silly, but I know, you know, Return of Sergeant Pecker, it's often said it as like an X-rated or even pornographic animation, but in a way...
But it isn't pornographic. Pornographic,
it isn't, yeah.
Pornographic is, if you're a skier and you hang mountains covered with snow in your home, you could call that art pornographic, mm-hmm. because there's no mystery, right? Mm-hmm. Erotic art employs the mystery.
Yeah, and it's definitely, like, the film has a lot to do with War of the Soul, where it's like, you know, Sergeant Pecker is going to go in this girl, but he doesn't really have, and he gets all excited for it, and it's kind of this weird anticlimactic ending, but it's definitely soulful and meaningful. If it wasn't, you know, if you're a prude, you're probably going to look at it as some, like you said, that you'll misinterpret as porn, but in a way, it does have soul in that, even avoided all humor.
And that's kind of a debate about, like, violence and sex in film. I mean, there's some people who don't want to see any sex or violence at all. And then there's a lot of films that people who just put in sex and violence just to, like, sell to make a profit or for kind of the shock value. Do you think, like, erotica and violence in art and film serves a purpose?
Well, I can't answer in an intelligent way because I'm not interested in those topics.
That's interesting. I mean, speaking about, you know, soul in cartoons, I mean, it's funny. One of my favorite ones that really where I got into you was this old MTV cartoon, Angry Cabaret, and that was like a short that was like kind of it was only like 8 minutes long, but it was like it seemed like it was almost like the courage I've always wanted to see, and it was like, you know, two punk characters where they listen to like cool 90s, you know, reference to industrial music like KMFDM, and just like in this dance club and nightclub or something. It seems like that.
But it was that, underground.
Yes, yes.
An underground club.
And this like H.R. Giger-esque kind of surreal. Yeah. And it's just like, that's so cool. I just wish it was a cartoon. I feel like the soul in that was like more on the tones of a punk style. And I always got that thing where it's like at that time when I was liking you, I like stuff like by Joan and Vasquez, like Invader Zim and Johnny the Homosalomaniac, and I liked
Invader Zim was cut short.
Yeah, and it's just that it goes along with that I call it the grimdark aesthetic, where I also was into, I guess, like Alex Party. I mean, in Juxtapose or mid Juxtapose magazines would often, you know, cite these artist as kind of, you know, up and coming, but also, like I said, today it's twee now. It's not grimdark. Grimdark is kind of, it's too much now, but I was a part of that grimdark, and I still like that grimdark aesthetic to it. And I think the soul of that, it really represents a target audience that once was, and it's interesting.
What I like about the grim and dark, the grimdark element, is that you could add stuff to it. I added, of course, surreal comedy. And a bit of Dadaism in narrative continuity. And this is what really excites me, is the ability to mash it up.
It's interesting.
I think when people sort of hear things like grim and dark, they automatically have this assumption that things like dark topics, like, say, violence, but I see a lot of it as just creating this sort of otherworldly atmosphere, transforming you, like, in a sense, you almost feel like you're transported to another dimension, the themes of surrealism.
I don't do any violence. It just doesn't do anything for me. It's not intelligent enough. It's not intelligent for me. But I like, when I mean dark, I'm talking about spiders crawling, you know, under the covers while you're with your lover. You know, this kind of what's going on here.
I feel bad.
I want you to have a smile when you're passing through the dark. I want you to be turned on. Yeah.
I feel bad when Courage, when, like, he ever screams, he, like, you know, his teeth explode or he loses his eyes. And it's always goofy when Courage is screaming.
Man,
it feels
that's
like he's
sexy.
In pain. He's like, he's in pain. I don't know.
He loves it. I think he's a masochist. There's a bit of masochism in our lives. I agree with it. Why do people do things that are so inimical to their progress? Why do they harm themselves by making stupid decisions, for instance?
A lot of people are just, they do harmful things just to fit in because it's a conformist thing to do.
Well, to themselves, I'm talking about that. Let's just keep it to the idea that
No, talking about each other, people. people do things that harm themselves to fit into with other people or society.
Perhaps, perhaps, but then you're revealing an illness in the society.
That's interesting. I mean, I was thinking of more on the lines. This might be a little off topic, but
Been on topic here?
I know, no. I'm just thinking of going back to loops and making because to the opposite effect. I'm thinking of a very older cartoon when Lily Lanley moved in. That was that was like your second one, and I always thought that was a very sentimental or kind of in opposite to Angry Cabaret. It's kind of like I think it's like more of the Woody Allen type drama and more of a. It's interesting because that's like if I was to pick up cartooning or even do art, I think that's something I would do personally by emotionally or something. It seems to me that lifestyle is something that could be aesthetically put it into cartooning in such respect. I mean, it's interesting.
Well, Pill Eater, let's say you're learning animation now. What's more important, the way your object feels or the way your object moves?
Well, it's like more like technical and aesthetic wise, and depending how you put that in discipline. I mean,
feelings.
You know, I like to. I still. Well, this might sound a little strange. I sometimes will draw in my book, and I used to do. When I stopped doing cartooning is when I started doing porn. Porn, and then I only draw now just in like my school notes and.
Did you get into the manga porn?
Yes. I actually
That's very, very intense stuff.
Not that I like the aesthetic thing. I don't like the whole violent, like you were just saying. I don't like violent stuff.
It's very violent.
We're kind of on that topic of violence, there's this series on Adult Swim. It's like a super jail, and it's extremely violent. But it has a very fascinating aesthetic because it is like very psychedelic, very surreal. You familiar with that show?
I know it. Of course. It's done here in Brooklyn. Or was. I don't know if they're still doing it.
It's speaking of Hang Tie real quick, and Lily Lanley moved in. This might sound a little cute, kind of. I always thought Lily was Asian, but she doesn't look Asian, but I always thought she was. And it kind of reminds
me. Baby, it comes through.
That's what reminds me of my own life. I'm just saying.
The mashup. We're talking about the very same thing. You know how the manga influences is taking Western elements and mashing it up into their culture, right, to produce their characters. I was doing the same.
Mm-hmm. Because I usually talk a lot.
But in reverse.
Mm-hmm. Because I usually like to talk in Asian studies about, this might sound cute, white male, Asian female relationships. And even though as much as I would like to think that, but instead it seems to be more of the Woody Allen to Jewish type. I don't know if that's the correct definition, but I want to believe it's rather Asian. But
yeah, it is. I'm telling you, those were the influences.
Yes. Okay, that's cool.
Of course, we're talking about that very same thing. We're mashing it up. Nothing lives on its own. Mm. Listen, our ancestors. They had sailed around the world. This is 10 to 7,000 years ago. This Columbus thing is for the birds.
There's a lot.
History is so important, just to get a sense of perspective, and not only that, it is empowering. You don't live in a vacuum. Where did we come from? Where are we going? What's your intention? Yes. What do you want out of all this mess?
I notice, like, with history and, I mean, we're just, if you think about history going back millions of years, we're just this tiny little blip in a sense. But I know in the past people were more thinking, like, what is the future going to be like? And I know people just got, I feel a lot of people feel like, oh, this is the present, and we're kind of, like, plateauing.
I don't know, baby. I don't know, because I don't have a... I'm very, very, very down right now on this whole thing. I don't know. Unless there's a way to take unstable atoms and make them stable again. I don't know how this adventure ends.
I mean, you could be a Buddhist, but
Yeah, all the great Buddhists, they're not on the planet anymore. They all left.
Oh, well. Yeah, I don't. That's interesting.
Also, we don't want to withdraw from life. Buddhism is a kind of withdrawal. We want to be engaged. We want to evoke change for the better, for the good of all, including nature. Anyway, that's the message between Dilly and his art. And I'm only beginning at this game, and I'm really just only beginning. I don't know if I'm going to get funding to make more series or where I'm going to go. But right now, Goose in High Heels, I'll finish that up in 2017, and I'll see how the universe responds. The universe.
Is that for a Cartoon Network, or that's going to be done independently?
No, this is an entirely independent project out of my studio, Stretch Films.
I wish it was on the networks, but... Yep.
No, it's not for the networks.
I know. I wish it was.
It's really for. It's for us all. I hope so. I hope it does. I hope it rings true. And I have to tell you, boys, I've never had a better conversation at this hour. And I want to thank you both so very, very much for having me on the show. It's just been fantastic. Pill Eater, what a joy! Thank you for all your bravery. Wish you lots of success, boys. Robert, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.